Spring is finally here, and that means a new season of Yes, We Are Open. This season, Al goes west. West to Calgary, Banff, and Canmore for more motivational stories of small business owners, their trials and triumphs. Settle in for 8 new weekly stories of perseverance over adversity. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, or get started at yesweareopenpodcast.com.
Hiring Al, good and you, not so bad. Squirrely Matt here. Whether you're just tuning in or you're revisiting old episodes, thank you for your incredible support of the Produce Stand podcast. That's what we appreciate about you. Now we have a small favor to ask. We're putting together some best of TPS episodes. That's where you come in. We want to hear from you. If you come across or have a favorite TPS clip, origin story, standout interview moment, or port near anything you deem to be wondrous, reach out through any of our socials and let us know. Now, we have a lot of content, so specify the episode and timestamp. Please and thank you. With that out of the way, let's get back to our regularly scheduled content. Bitter patter.
Hey everyone, Al here. Before we begin tonight's special episode, I'd like to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Diabolical Coffee. It's devilishly good coffee and diabolically awesome swag. There's a roast for all tastes. You can order whole bean, coarse and standard grind, espresso. There's even a K-cup option for single cup brewers. And right now you can use a promo code PRODUCESTAND for 20% off anything in the store. That's 20% off all coffee and merch. Thank you, Diabolical Coffee and Eric, for your support. Now, here's our chat with Kehlani Rose.
While we are gathering virtually today, we acknowledge that each of us is on the traditional territory of many nations across Turtle Island.
We record in Toronto, the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the Credit, the Anishinaabek, the Chippewa, the Haudenosaunee, and the Wendat peoples.
Today, it is home to many diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis peoples.
We offer this acknowledgement as a stepping stone toward honoring the original occupants, a testimony to the oppression faced by Indigenous peoples, and our commitment to creating dialogues aimed at addressing such systemic injustice.
That fresh produce stand there, that's a beauty.
What do you listen to?
My favorite murder podcast.
Taggart and Torrance podcast.
The produce stand.
Fucking sexy.
It's Thirsty Thursday, and that means we are once again hanging out at the produce stand. Podcast covering everything in the universe. Now, I know what you're thinking. There are many other Letterkenny podcasts out there, but this one finally got its first female cast member interview. I'm Al, your host, and joining me in the room is the lovely Tanya. And online, we have Squirrely Matt. Victor is gallivanting across Europe by train, so he can't join us, but he is in his bliss. And joining us this week, she's an award-winning filmmaker, actor, DJ, classically and culturally trained dancer. She won the 2021 award for Best Choreography at the Cannes World Film Festival for the film Within the Silence. You may have seen her on shows like Flimsy or the film The Color Rose, but we all know and love her as Mi Gwan on Shorzy. Please join me in making some noise for Kehlani Rose.
Oh my god.
Great welcome.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Oh my god.
Wait.
Yes.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Oh my god.
I regret nothing.
Welcome to the produce stand, Kehlani.
I don't think she knew what hit her then.
No.
I don't even know what to say. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me. Mahalo.
Mahalo. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Today. I mean, I said it in your intro, but thank you for being the brave first female cast member we've had on the show. We've interviewed most of the sluts from Shorzy. We've interviewed a lot of the male cast members on Letterkenny, but the ladies have eluded us. I think they think we're, you know, I don't know, creepy or something. So even though my wife here has tried to tell him it's okay, but here you are. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's start with, where are you joining us from?
All right. So here we go. A little duck health for you. Mm-hmm. My traditional language from here in Clately, Two Rivers territory. Okay. Su'at'o, Kehlani Rose Sahatni, Alu Nani Brown Anto'o, Atsiancho, Captain Owen Forrester Brown Inlay, Atsujacho, Granny Seymour Inlay, Kleitli, Nedas Neke, Haran At'o Inlay, Et Hora Huni Inkesnesi. So my name is Kehlani. Mm-hmm. I am the daughter of Nani Brown. I am the great-granddaughter of Captain Owen Forrester Brown and the great-great-granddaughter of the legendary Granny Seymour. I'm coming to you live from Klitlitene territory, the people where the two rivers flow together, also known as Prince George in central interior BC.
Very nice.
And I was born and raised here, and I've just come home. So it's really good to be joining you from my traditional homelands today.
Amazing. So you're up in Prince George, BC. What's it up like there right now?
Gorgeous. Mm-hmm. A little buggy.
Oh, yeah?
They're getting excited right now. But, you know, the snow has melted. The river is high. And the sun is out, so cannot complain. It feels great.
And thank you for that intro of yourself. That made me like shudder a little. That sounded so amazing, and just I love that you did that. So thank you.
Thanks,
for sharing
Daddy.
That with us.
It's really amazing. Exciting to share it with you because I am just learning it myself, and I feel like being able to continue carrying revitalization with our language is so meaningful to me. So yeah, thank you for sharing.
Yeah, it was amazing.
So you say you're from there originally. So you were born and raised in Prince George?
Yes, I was.
But I've seen you. You also have a home in Hawaii, or is that what's your connection there to those islands?
So mom's family is also from there. There's quite a few intersections with mm-hmm. our indigenous roots.
Right.
So we have a great-great-grandpa of mine who came here and is renowned for his navigational skills. Mm-hmm. Funny enough, Polynesian, following the stars.
Right.
But yeah, fell in love with a Tlaitli woman. So those indigenous roots intertwined. And the family from the islands of Hawaii originally comes from Maui, mm-hmm. which I have yet to visit.
Oh.
But my family right now lives on the Big Island, Kona side, which has a special place in my heart for sure.
It's one of those places we've always wanted to visit. Mm-hmm. And one day yeah. we'll get out there for sure. Yeah. So let's talk about, I mean, your IMDb and actually your background is interesting because, like I said, you're an artist, you're an actor, you're a dancer. What comes first? What's your first love?
Ooh, my first love and forever love will be dance and mm-hmm. movement. I learned that growing up in the household from my mother, who learned it from her father, traditional hula. And that was the thing that, I mean, she has photos of me standing up, like I'm learning how to stand mm-hmm. and I'm like, I can fit underneath the chair and I'm dressed up in my lei and she was, you know, sharing her hula and I'm like, that was the beginnings, like still getting my legs, but already moving. So I think that's a language that I know and that I love because it's so universal.
Mm-hmm. How far did you take that? Did you go on to study it post-secondary?
Yes. So I'll be real with you. Mm. My first dream and the path that I thought I would be on right now was to dance with Beyonce.
Nice.
At least you were dreaming big, right?
I'm just going to throw it out there, guys. My birthday's in August. So if anybody wants to get me Beyonce tickets in Vancouver...
Nice.
Don't worry. Our listeners are on it already.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all bugging
her.
But
no, for real. Post-secondary. Yeah, I moved. I had a scholarship for a four-year ride up at UNBC. But we don't really, at the time, we didn't have much of an arts program. And that's where all my loves are. So I registered because my mom was super stoked and I dropped out before I even finished a semester. And I ended up going down to Vancouver to pursue dance. To so-called Vancouver, to the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh traditional territories. And kind of followed a path of classical ballet, and then that ended up turning into more commercial and urban, more commercialized styles because I landed a Disney cruise ship contract.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Oh, very
which
cool.
Which was kind of my first, like, dance break and a really enjoyable time of life. Yeah, a lot of my family is still in the dance world. I love the intersectionality whenever there's an opportunity to bring dance and weave it into my creative projects that I do. And I'll just do a little detour story for you guys if
Go
you
for
want.
It. Yes, absolutely. We love those.
We love stories.
Awesome. I was just participating in a collaborative arts festival up here in Clatlie territory called Community Moves, put together by a good friend of mine, Shelby Richardson, who has Method Dance Company, and it's a contemporary company. And this festival was so cool because they basically just, it was its first annual, and I'm really excited for it to come back. But they brought together all the intersections of artists you could imagine. It was just like this creative pod of like, hey, what do you do? What do we want to do? And how do we put it all together? So we had contemporary dancers, we had poets, we had actors, we had visual artists, painters, graphic designers, and everybody just kind of collaborated between these 12 different pieces. And we had this community showcase that was just the best creative energy. So
nice.
The piece that I shared with the three dancers, the harp player and the visual artist is called Riverwork. Mm-hmm. And the theme of it that we co-created was just what it means to embrace the teachings of the water and the river where we live here as a collective responsibility towards embracing truth and healing and how we're working together to really move forward as a community. So it gives me chills thinking about these opportunities that come together where I can really offer those gifts of dance and storytelling and now representation for my culture. And so, yeah, I guess it's my first love. Dance is my first love. And it's carrying through with me in so many ways and kind of, we're going to go on a whole other tangent, but I'm just going to pause right there and just say, I love it. It's part of my soul. And it's definitely been like sort of the Kickstarter for all the other avenues.
You're certainly passionate though. You can see.
Yeah, for sure. This river work, is this available somewhere online that we can watch it or direct people to go see it?
I don't know if there's a recording released yet, but
well, if there is, share it with us and we will definitely amplify it through our channels because that'd be great.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, for sure.
I will get that to you. And you know what? You just sparked me another. I was going to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Now it's gone. It's okay. It'll come back.
If it comes back, no problem. Just interrupt whatever we're saying and because we're here for you. So let's talk about, I mean, the dancing. Obviously, you're very passionate about that. And so this, I mean, this is a big deal. You win a Best Choreography at the Cannes Film Festival. So this is for dancing that you did for a movie? Is that what happened there?
Yes. It's a short film that my friend Jade Taylor wrote and directed. Mm-hmm. I'm so happy. I'm just so happy to talk about this one. Representation for the disabled community. Okay. We had a beautiful story that she wrote about domestic abuse and sort of the gift of imagination and creativity in terms of healing as well. So we follow this young 7-year-old girl who is deaf, and sort of we witness the domestic violence that's happening in her home and her fairy tale world she goes into, and kind of it's like a fairy godmother type role. The pixie, she takes her into her fairy tale realm where she escapes from that violence. And at the very end, you kind of see how her mother takes charge of kind of ending that cycle. Mm-hmm. And it was just a beautiful depiction of resilience. And the wonderful thing about that experience itself was exploring accessibility on set, because the casting was very authentic to the role. So we had this young girl who was hearing impaired. And so it was a really wonderful opportunity for our whole entire crew and cast to learn the basics of American Sign Language and practice that. And it was so, so cool too, because we really had to get creative with our cueing, because there was no way to say action. You know, it was like very visual and it just was such an eye-opening experience in itself. And then to be able to weave together choreography that also showed sort of that relationship between arts and expression from this little girl's perspective. It was a special one for sure.
Well,
it's amazing. And I love that. Like, I imagine that was an experience, like putting yourself in the shoes of anyone or that eye-opening experiences when you were embedded in them. You know, we take a lot of things for granted, and I'm sure like you said, you couldn't even say action. Like a simple gesture like that is a whole different world to someone with a disability. So
Yeah, that's pretty wild to think through, but I love that you guys embrace the authenticity around that and kept it real.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to go to Cannes for the festival?
Unfortunately not. Aww. That was the COVID year.
Oh, that's too bad.
One day.
But it's still a great...
Congratulations, though. That's exactly. A great... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, according to your IMDb, your first acting role, or credit anyway, is The Color Rose, also in 2020. So can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. A great group of humans, a really wonderful time because we filmed it up here in the north, if you want to call it that, or sure. Over on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. Just a story exploring sort of teenage friendships, belonging. There was a lot going on with that piece, but what I can say is the seven of us, sort of the main gang, the gaggle, mm-hmm. just a longstanding relationship from that film. And it's on, I think it's on all platforms right now. It actually changed its name once it got picked up by distributors. So now I think it's known as The Sinners, but, originally, I believe the creator was hoping for it to be called The Color Rose, or it was, that's its original.
Oh, okay. So maybe that's why I couldn't find it. So The Sinners, I'll have to check that one out for sure. So, I mean, so how did you get into acting then? I mean, how did this come about?
So this is a really interesting question because what it makes me think of, Matt's giving me such a look right now. I love it.
Okay. No, you're going somewhere. So you got my attention.
Yeah.
It makes me think about what acting is. And when I break that down for myself, what I come to is storytelling. Mm-hmm. It's exploration of humanity, what our relationships mean, and who we are just as humans. I think about when that first entered into a value system or a communication system and how that is embedded in my life. And I really think on sort of a spiritual and cultural level, it's in my blood. Mm-hmm. My ancestors from Clately and also my Kanaka Maoli ancestors from Hawaii, we had no written languages.
Right.
Pre-contact. Oh, and so everything, history, traditions, language, all of our knowledge was passed down through storytelling, through dance, through chant. And so there is definitely a really deep connection to storytelling in sort of an innate way of being that is, that's really special to me and that I feel really honored to be doing as a career, as a passion, as this contemporary form in honor of my ancestors and everyone who came before me. So I think in a really like deeply spiritual sense, it's always a part of me and a mm-hmm. part of who I come from. And then if I'm talking about a more sort of technical, physical breakdown of life and Kehlani and what the pathway was with that, it definitely came into my lap. Like it was a more of a thing that found me.
Right.
Wasn't ever searching for it. And to be real with you guys, I never knew that I could play in this world. Hmm. When I was growing up, there was not a whole lot of representation, if any, that I saw of people who looked like me, of Indigenous women, of mixed race women. Playing any roles at all. I think it really limited my awareness of how to be included in that space. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it just wasn't on my radar. And I really was pursuing the dance pathway. And it was only because I went in search of an agent for dance that acting fell into my lap, because the person that I submitted to was like, sure, I'll take you on the roster. You're dope. But you're going to go take acting class.
Right.
And that's so amazing. I was like, okay, fun.
So, I mean, with everything you talked about there and your connection with this space, when you finally got that first opportunity, did you find it a very natural transition for yourself, or were there some real challenges in putting yourself in front of a camera and taking on these roles and these personalities? How did you shift into that?
Excellent question. I think that I'm really grateful. I'm really grateful to have acting in my life because of how healing it is, personally and intergenerationally. I know that a lot of my childhood conditioning, not to get into a whole deep, dark pathway, but there was a lot of abuse in my family and a lot of conditioning towards being silent. And that was the best way to stay safe. So I don't think I had a lot of comfort with my voice. And entering into the world of acting really guided me towards a confidence with my voice and towards a courage with embracing my voice that I'm so grateful for.
That's amazing.
So I think there was definitely like some trauma to break through, but it felt so liberating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you've definitely found your voice, and we won't get too far away from acting, but I just want to really quickly touch upon your production too. I mean, why don't we talk about the birth of Two Rivers and a Rose Filmworks Incorporated? What is that?
This is a culmination of the namesake of my place, the mission that I'm on as an artist, and what it feels like to rise.
I love that.
So Two Rivers, as you know, is the place that I was born in. Mm-hmm. It's my people. It's what guides me in life, you know, these teachings of convergence, these teachings of unity, of the strength in coming together, and also the intersections as an artist. I find so much resonance like in that as part of my identity. The rhythm of it is also a cool story. I was nerding out during the pandemic on Masterclass. Mm. I'm a big fan of Spike Lee. Mm. And I was going hard with all of his stories. And I started learning about the namesake of his production company, which is 40 Acres and a Mule.
Right.
And I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but for any of the listeners who are not familiar with it, 40 Acres and a Mule was what was promised in the South to the slaves.
Right.
In reparations when they were liberated, which was never delivered. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to Spike Lee talk about the birth of his productions and the voice that he was trying to amplify for representation of indigenous or of Black stories, the representation of Black stories in Hollywood and mainstream media, and just that reclamation of space. And I really resonated with that. And so I also loved how the minute you hear it, it kind of like rolls off the tongue and you're just like, what's the story with that? That's a very specific image. There's got to be a story.
Yeah.
So I think just in the name of that reclamation and resurgence from an Indigenous perspective, there's that element to it as well. And then lastly, the rose part,
that's you.
That's me.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you one more story, if that's okay. I feel like I'm going.
No, that's what we're.
That's why we're here.
Keep up here, Kehlani. This is what we're here for.
Keep up. So when I originally, Rose is originally my middle name.
Okay.
Kehlani Elizabeth Rose, and then I had another last name, which was my father's last name, but I legally changed it when I was getting into some of that energy and cleansing that space for myself. I wasn't too sure what the new last name was going to be within the family. We were all talking about kind of doing that change together. Mm-hmm. And I was really impatient. I'm just going to say patience is not a strength. So in the midst of these discussions and trying to come to an idea together, I was like, you know what, you guys, when it comes, but for the meantime, I'm just going to keep my middle name. And my sister was like, that's really cool. I was like, what do you mean? She's like, well, Kehlani Rose. She's like, it's the past tense of rise.
Oh,
and I
was
like, dude. Didn't even
done.
I didn't even think about that. Wow, you're right.
Mic drop.
It just felt like some energy and like a verb that I really wanted to embody moving forward. So, so there's that cool piece to it, and also one other piece to the story, which really brought me to tears this past year, in my reconnection journey to Indigenous community. Of course, you guys have gotten to know me a little bit, sort of my first language, my first love, everything that I resonate with is music and dance. Mm-hmm. And when I was coming home to my Clatlic community, I was asking my cousins, you know, how do I learn our traditional songs and dances? And the answer for our communities is it all comes from the matriarchal clan. So I have to know my clan to be able to know my songs and dances. And that's still a big question mark for my family. There's a lot of disconnect there within records and within, you know, the whole mess of bureaucracy and colonization. But I found out just this year that it traces back to a great ancestor who was born in Lacolans, which translates to the place of the wild roses.
Wow.
And when I found that out, I literally sat in my living room for a minute and had some tears to myself, because I can't explain to you guys how much it means as an Indigenous person who grew up disconnected from community, coming home and finding belonging and finding family. And so to feel like it was finding me before I found it, it just was like a really, really powerful moment.
It all came together and made sense all at once. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. So last couple of years have been rough on everybody, but, and I really don't want to dwell on this, but we just need to touch on it a bit and spend as much time as you want or are comfortable with, but we need to talk about your harrowing ordeal from last year. I mean, first of all, how are you doing?
Thank you for asking that. I appreciate the gentle question. I feel so grateful to be here. I feel really grateful to be having this conversation with you both, with you three right now. And it definitely feels like the days are precious. Mm-hmm. It feels like a really meaningful, fresh start, rebirth in a way, especially because I'm able to come home to where I was born and really reset and really look intentionally at all the firsts that I'm having in this bonus round and how I want to redo them for little Kehlani. You know, the things that might've gone sideways or the things that you would want to have for your little person in a good way that maybe weren't so good the first time. So I'm feeling really, really grateful that I can have that awareness coming into this new chapter. I feel physically great.
Oh, great.
thank you for the question. I think that part was a little bit, I think maybe made it even trickier just mm-hmm. because my body was so much ahead of my brain and yeah. my heart, and like mentally and spiritually, it took a while to catch up to where I was at physically. And I guess that's a blessing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, especially with dance being such a big part of your life. I mean, was there at any point a time where you thought, oh my God, that won't be a part of it? Like, I don't want to dwell too much on the negative, but I'm just trying to see where you are at now, like where you came from and where you're at now, right? I mean, Kehlani rose, you rose from this. And I love the way you call it your bonus round. that's amazing.
That's cute. I like it.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, there were some discouraging moments in the hospital for sure. Mm-hmm. And there was one moment the night that it happened that I was fighting so hard, and I was conscious on the table in trauma bay in the ER mm-hmm. the whole time. And I was feeling every single sensation the whole time that there was 10 doctors, emergency workers, nurses, 10 of them in the room saving me that night. And
wow,
I can't say thank you enough to those people, but there was definitely one moment where I was like, I don't know if I could do this. Like, I just remember feeling that pain and being like, I'm fighting so hard. I'm fighting. And then there was one moment where I asked them, I was like, how long is it going to feel like this? Mm. Because of what they were trying to do to save my lung.
Right.
And they told me it would be in there for a few days. And I just remember being like,
yeah.
So, yeah. There are some moments where I really had to dig into that fight. And physically coming out of it, I think when I couldn't lift my arm or have strength on that right side of my body, that was caused a little bit of depression for a little while.
Yeah.
So I think just working through gentleness with myself in those moments and relearning how to take it slow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How are you now? So are you at 100% now, would you say? 80%, 90%? What would you think?
Well, I have this cool little doohickey thing. I should show it to you guys. It looks like a milkshake cup.
Okay.
And it's So that I can measure my lung capacity and my lung.
Oh, all right.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The bullet went straight through my right lung. So it fully collapsed and filled with blood. But the human body is incredible. And I believe, aside from a little bit of scar tissue, that we're coming back on track with that guy. And it looks like my lung capacity is maybe average right now. I should go on a hike and test it out.
You know, take your time. You don't need to push it right away.
Stay in low altitude.
Yeah, low altitude, maybe.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, that was one thing that I ended up doing right as soon as I was cleared. Mm-hmm. A really good friend of mine invited me into the Andes in Ecuador, which, as you know, is the highest altitude in the world. And I went there to see a medicine, spiritual community, and I was a little nervous because I was like, what's going to happen in this altitude? But it was a really nice kind of breakthrough moment where I was like, okay, if I can handle this, I think
we're coming back. I'm over the hump, and now it's just pushing forward. Honestly, as you're telling this, my heart is racing. Like, this is, I'm sorry you had to go through that, but I'm so amazed at how you persevered and come out the other side. I can tell you, I mean, obviously, this is our first one-on-one with you around this, but when your event happened, everyone surrounding the Letterkenny and the Shorzy universe, we all stood still. Like, it caught us all off guard. And obviously, we only knew you through your role, and then anything that we've expanded to say, you know, look at how amazing she's here. Let's see what else is out there. But it stopped us all in our tracks, and we're all following your journey, and we're so just amazing you're out the other side and is doing as well as you are. So
very grateful.
Thank you so much for sharing
nothing but love
your
for you.
Story with us. You're just so, you're so inspirational, you're so well spoken, and so you're so moving just to hear your story and to hear about your life. You are just, you're incredible, just incredible.
I want to give you guys some love and just a shout out, because I'm really appreciative of how sensitive you are, the way you invite a safe conversation about trauma. I think that being trauma informed is so important, and just thank you for handling that so gently. I'm grateful to share a little bit with you on that. And also, I got to give some love to all the Shorzy community that gave me love during that time, because I did feel it. So thank you guys. I think I said at one point, they're making me cry like Shorzy during the national anthem.
That checks out.
I just felt the love. Yeah, so yeah.
That's great. Perfect.
Well, I hope you did, because it was felt all around here too. So let's get to happier stuff now, shall we? Let's talk about Shorzy. This is the paid this is a paid content. People are here to listen to Shorzy, and we've taken half of the time getting here, but it was all worth the journey. How, this is, you know, your first acting job was in 2020. How do you get into Shorzy?
Bro.
Oh, I already like where this is going. All right.
Bro.
I'm settling in.
Okay. So I think it was definitely summertime. I'm going to say June. June before we started filming season one, which we did in November that year. June, I get this email casting call as per usual. And I read the sides and I'm like, the fuck is an aqua dump? Actually, though, that was the audition. And I was like, this is genius. And the material is just so fun. Like, Jared's writing, come on. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I just sent in a tape, and I had so much fun taping it.
Yeah.
And then I went outside to play in the sun with my friends. And I kind of just, you know, you let it go. You try to forget about it, because if you get your hopes up, it's never, it's never a good thing. But I mean, yeah, I just, it felt really natural. Mm-hmm. Like I don't want to say that I'm a hard ass, because I'm really not in real life. But for some reason, it was just a really enjoyable character to get to know through the audition process. And I got a call pretty soon after that from Kara. Shout out Kara.
Shout out to Kara.
Being like, we want you on the team.
Amazing.
We loved your audition. And I was like,
so
you're like, seriously, I'm in.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you have any inkling, I mean, about Letterkenny before? I mean, Letterkenny had a lot of accolades for the representation of the of indigenous culture, thanks to Kaniti O'Horn and guys like Bradley Trudeau and Dylan Cook, who we've interviewed with them, and they've all said the same thing. They've treated it properly, and they love the way it was done. Did you know about any of that before Shrozay came along? Was it anywhere on your radar?
It was on my radar because I had friends within community that were super connected and dialed in with it, and just talking about how legendary it is. So that was pretty wild. I also have like a couple really like standout memories of, you know, post club nights, going home at like 3 a.m. and that's right. what you put on. So, you know, I love it when things come full circle. I don't know what more I could tell you. It just was one of those really organic things that I'm really grateful for. And it's been such a learning process, being able to be beside Jared, get to know Dio, working with all the guys and a team, like a crew behind the scenes that's been together for so long. That's just this well-oiled machine. It's really nice to be introduced to the rhythm of that world in that way.
So what was your first encounter with them? Was it like a meet and greet with Jared, or did you get thrown right in on set? Like, what was your first encounter when around the show? Because beyond Kara saying, hey, do you want to come out?
So, okay, there's a couple little intersections here, which were really cool. Like, which one comes first? So I guess it would be, I was in LA for a dance contract, and one of my buddies was asking me, what's coming up next for you? And I was like, I just got on this cool new show. It's a spinoff of Letterkenny. It's called Shorzy. It's going to be hilarious. And he was like, what? No way. Shorzy? My friends just booked Sanguinette.
Harlan. Nice.
Harlan. He's like, I should connect you guys. So Harlan and I got connected via a mutual friend over Instagram before we got out to Sudbury. And so we were DMing and we were like, hey, like, nice to meet you, and had a little kind of get to know each other moment. So that was really, it was really comforting, because to be able to go there and then know a buddy when you're going into it was really sweet. And he really is my guy. Like, I love Harlan. Happy birthday, Harlan. It was just
Right. Yeah, his birthday was a little while ago. Yeah, we spent a couple of fun nights with Harlan Station 84 last month.
I think we missed you by a night.
Yeah,
probably. We were up there. We arrived the night before the wrap party in Sudbury. We were up there for a few days.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I heard about your visit. Yeah, we totally ships in the night.
Yeah. We were so upset because we hadn't had any female cast members on, so we were hoping to run into you and to Blair and Tasia, but unfortunately, it wasn't meant to be. But thankfully, to Jared and Kara for making the connection, we really appreciate it.
Yeah, and I will say, honored to be the first of the ladies, and hopefully more to come for you guys.
Blair's joining us on Monday. So
we set that as like a podcast goal this year. We're like, we need to celebrate the amazing women of these shows. We have to get them on this year. So
girl power.
We're over the top now. It's just.
Well, the show does such a great job, like just how they set women and just I'm speechless. I'm so you're so well spoken, and I'm so nervous.
They do a great job. I think that was one of the things that drew me even more so in connection with the character and the trio, was just feeling like, what a cool way. I mean, there's so many layers that Jared infiltrated with this kind of representation across the board. And one of the things that stood out to me was like, you know how he kind of flips the stereotypes on its head and it's this strong group of women leading the gang.
Yeah.
It really brings me back to matriarchal roots in my community, you know, turning to those matriarchs as decision makers. And it's kind of like a cool contemporary under the radar representation of what that looks like and what that feels like. So yeah, I feel you on that. It's like really nice to see some strong female characters.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Miigwan and Ziigwan. I mean, I did a little research, and those are two Ojibwe names. Miigwan meaning feather and Ziigwan meaning spring. Is there anything behind that in terms of the characters that might, I mean, I can kind of see her character is a little softer because, you know, she's got that relationship with Sanguinette, and Zeke's always the one, you know, yelling at Shorzy and insulting him. So I can see the feather part there for you, but I don't see the spring part there for her.
Yeah, I love that you looked that up. Thank you for doing your homework.
I tried.
I also was like getting familiar with Ojibwe and wanting to get familiar with all the clues that I could gather from my character and who she is and what you know, what she's all about. And yeah, I'm stoked that Miguan means feather. I really feel connected to that. Like my spirit feels like a little peacock feather. It's also really, really cool to see how, you know, from season one to season two, sort of like the yin and yang of Meeg and Zeeg, and how, you know, you get a little, I'm not going to give any spoilers away, I promise, but how, you know, they just kind of get a little deeper into their
relationship.
Yin and yang sides of like Zeeg always and Shorzy always going in on each other, and Meeg still kind of staying true to that. How would I describe it? I would just say like a little bit more composed behavior and like choice of language.
Right. Did you know Blair before or was she somebody you met on set?
We met in Vancouver before we went to set because she had just moved to Vancouver.
Oh, okay.
So that was a cute moment because we were supposed to have an introductory meeting on Zoom with Jared and Jacob, the director. Mm-hmm. And we didn't tell them. We just kind of surprised them that we were going to do it together because I think at the time she didn't quite have the internet set up in her place yet. And so, yeah, we also kind of like got sneaky. I invited her over to my place. And then we had basically it was like a Zoom set up like this where it was them two on a window and then my window. And they're like, oh, we should wait for Blair. And then we just did this cute thing where she like popped up.
That's great.
Awesome. So what was the, I mean, you already referred to you guys as a trio. What was the dynamic like of the three of you? And especially as the show progressed and now we're into season two, I know you can't tell us anything about season two, but like, how is that relationship of the trio evolved? And yeah, what's talk about that.
It's funny because I'm trying to check myself as I go to make sure.
I bet you are. We could try to trip you, but we don't want to do that.
No.
But yeah, I got a story for you about the trio, and then I got a story for you that I didn't get to about the first meet and greet there with Jared at his house. But the trio dynamics, I mean, it just kind of fascinates me how on point they were with casting the three of us. Mm-hmm. We had a funny moment during season one where the three of us had a night off and we were in a taxi, either coming to a show or coming from a dinner or something like that. But we were in this taxi and the taxi driver was kind of giving us the runaround. And just in that moment, the way each of us handled the situation was hilarious because Blair got heated pretty quick.
Right. So you're already in character.
She was trying to mediate and like get things. She was really trying to get a handle of the situation, get ahead of it. And I was just there kind of like quietly ready to mediate if necessary.
Yeah.
But it was just funny because we came out of it and we looked at each other and we were like, that just happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that just happened. I would say, what would I say about this trio? I think our characters really complement each other in terms of like the show, the story, the underdog fight, and how we kind of manage these guys, these sluts. Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know your ages, and I know better than to ask, but I do know that Tasia is probably the more experienced in terms of she's had a lot of more acting roles, especially she's on a big show, the 100, right? So is she the one that you kind of both look to for, you know, experience for advice and stuff like that?
There's a lot of that sharing going on for sure.
Yeah.
Really grateful for that, that component to be there in the dynamic. It's great. It's great too, because the team does move so fast to have that sort of experience with Tass and her just, you know, finding those really nice teaching moments.
Yeah.
It's
probably very calming to have her there going, don't worry, you know, this is normal or whatever. We're going to get through this and that kind of thing. Right. Yeah.
Yep. Awesome. Yep. Or right. Like reminding you to think of something that you maybe wouldn't have paid attention to, or just, you know, it's just like I said, a lot of absorption working with all these pros.
Right.
Yeah. So I want you to tell us your Jared story. You said
the
first meet and greet. I don't want to let you off the hook on that one. And then I've got a question after on the other
side.
Yeah, I'm not letting you off the hook. That sounded interesting.
True. So we get to Sudbury And they schedule a rehearsal. This is like the introduction of season one. Mm-hmm. So this is the first time we're all getting together in the same room. And when I say all of us, it was Jared, Jacob, the director, Tass, Blair, me, Harlan, and of course, Ryan McDonald.
Right.
Michaels. Yes, never misses the mark, Michaels. Mm-hmm. And we were just running a couple scenes to kind of get our chemistry on and just feel each other out and just get into a good flow. And yeah, it was just such a nice grounding way to begin the process, because Jared has that nice place on the lake out there when we're shooting. So we ended up just sitting in his living room, looking out at the lake, running our first kind of group scenes. And the one that also stands out is when we're, it must be like, there's so many favorites I have from season one, but the one where Michaels and Shorzy are going at each other. He's talking to me. I'm not talking to you like that, back and forth. Yeah. And I mean, the chemistry off the bat was pretty great. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the first taste we all had of each other in the same room in person. Nice. It was a great way to kick it off, for sure.
That's amazing. Now, you talked about the trio. I'm very curious about this one. Flipping the whole script on this one, you clearly come from a very artistic background. Now you're thrown into this world with a group of these jocks, these hockey players. Like, we went to base camp. They have a whole trailer just as a gym so these guys can you know do their thing. Like, what was your, like, had you been around this kind of environment with these kind of guys before, and what did you think of it, and how did that work?
Never. You know what's
like,
so funny,
like TR people... alone feels like he'd be a lot to take in at first.
Yeah.
So true. Because I feel like we truly probably went from that read through at Jared's house into a night where he basically had a barbecue and all the boys got sloshed and ran into the lake, went skinny dipping at like 12 a.m. And Terry was just on a level, I will tell you. But the boys and the jock life and that whole world. It's funny too, because if we go back to the yin and yang, Blair shared with me a little bit, and I know you guys will get into it with her as well, but like, there's a lot of, she grew up with brothers. Hockey was a big part of their life. And for me, I grew up with sisters. I grew up in ballet class. Mm-hmm. And I will admit that I feel like I maybe tried to fit in more during interviews for season one, being like, oh yeah, I've been to a couple hockey games and this kind of thing. But like, ultimately it was a shock to the system. And I had to do a lot of homework, mm-hmm. because it was just not my world. Right. And I will say that it was the best way to get introduced to it, because the boys are like the brothers I never had.
Right.
And there is that similarity, that parallel, I would say. I think it's really nice, because it's a line that it's one of those one-liners from the show that really hits with me every time. Mm. Kids in sports stay off the streets.
Right.
And for me, that was dance class. So I could really relate to sort of that safe space for kids to go, or that thing that brings communities together, mm-hmm. in an art sense, in the dance sense. Yeah. And
you need that outlet, right?
Mm-hmm. Something. Yeah. Yeah. So lots of a big learning curve, but it's been really great. I feel much more at home season two with the guys.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, if it means anything, I would have been in the same boat as you. Like, the guys here on our show, they know I'm all go sports. Like, it means nothing to me. So, yay. You put me on skates, it's going to be a joke. It's not going to be anything pretty.
Right? Yeah. That's the real kicker.
All right. We're approaching the hour, but I've got a bunch of listener questions. So I'm going to try to get through these as quick as possible, if that's okay.
Awesome.
But first, I have a comment from one of our listeners and one of our friends. One of the nicest people you will ever meet. She is a sweetheart and a true talent. And that's from our buddy, Billy Buttry. He saw that you were coming on, and he had to let us know how good you were. And of course, we knew that. But and I believe maybe Matt might have a few too.
Yeah, so I reached out to a few people you might know. I did get a couple responses. So your boy Max Buffard wanted to say what's up, peace, love, and blessings from him, sending all the love. Ryan McDonald, I reached out to him and I asked him, do you have anything you want to say? And his response was very simple. He's like, she's an absolute gem. What else do you want me to add? So that's from Ryan McDonald. And I'm not going to say who this is, because if he's as confident as he is, I think you're going to know exactly. All I was told was to tell you Hakuna Matata. Who am I talking about there?
I'm going to say Harlan.
Yes. Wow. Yes. See? Okay. I assume there was a story there. He's like, she'll know exactly what I mean or what you mean.
We got the sense hanging out with Harlan that he preferred hanging out with the ladies than the jocks as well. So I think he was more comfortable in your group than he was with the hockey players.
I mean, Harlan's one of us. Let's just say that. Yes. Harlan's.
Yeah. He's a musician. He loves his guitar. So yeah, for sure. We have here a message from Cinders23 on Twitter. Please, somehow let her know there were many, many praying for her and her recovery. If it isn't mentioned, I just wanted to know there were positive, healing, loving vibes, energy surrounding her. We love her. And that's, again, from our friend Cinders23 on Twitter. Question from our buddy Dennis Suter in the UK. Do you stay on set when they're shooting the hockey scenes? And if so, who's the best slut on the ice? I mean, you don't have to answer that.
I love it because I actually probably annoy the shit out of them when I do hang around.
Okay.
Because I want to see them on their ice and on their game. So yeah, I do if I'm allowed. And they're so great about having me there, sneaking around, shadowing Jacob. The best slut on the ice part. Ooh.
You can be honest here. It's okay.
I'm going to go with most entertaining slut on the ice.
All right.
I'm going to go with 69 right there. Hilarious video BTS of like, because when they're in between takes, sometimes they're just laying on the ice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was like doing these little push offs from the sideboards with his skates on his back. It was pretty cute.
Dennis also asked if you skate or play yourself. Now, you're not into hockey, but can you skate?
Much appreciation for hockey and much appreciation for skaters. No. Would not dishonor the ice in that way.
I love how you spun that. That's good. You've had this question before, haven't you?
So you've kind of already answered this, but Mike from New Jersey said that Tasia revealed on Terry Ryan's podcast that she had to learn everything about hockey when she got the role. So was it the same for you? And it sounds like it was pretty much the same for you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Steep learning curve.
Was it a lot of memorization, or did you actually take the time to understand what the words meant?
I think I'm still trying to understand what all the words mean, but I think I've just embraced that this is going to be like a long-term journey for me. So it's kind of an ad hoc learn as you go thing.
Right. Yeah. Differences between shooting in Sudbury in 21 versus 23. So yeah, I mean, first year you guys were in total lockdown. This past year was a little more open, right? So, I mean, those are some differences there, but what else would you say?
I mean the weather.
Mm-hmm.
We were there in the winter for season one, and for season two, it was more on the cusp of spring. I think when we got there, there was still some snow, but it was all melting. So for me, when I travel for work or any reason, really, it's important to me to be in connection with the land. So I was really grateful to be there during spring because I actually got to do a bit more exploring, went on a couple hikes, went to the lake, gave an offering.
Yeah. It's a great area for all that too, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was a nice change up.
Kehlani and Blair do a great job of pulling off the annoyed sister role with subtle huffs and eye rolls and glances. Did that come naturally, or was it something you guys had to kind of work on?
Pretty natural.
Yeah. These questions are all from our buddy Adrian, who's from Maine. So he himself is a hiker, so he'll appreciate that you like your hiking. Next question here from Tobias in Missouri. How did she get into, we already asked about the acting, but he asked about your dream role. What would be your dream role?
Ooh, a dream role. I think right now it would be something, there's a couple. It would be really dope to be able to infiltrate a superhero world.
Mm. Nice.
Man. For it.
Yeah, yeah. It would be really dope to do that. Yeah. Westerns sound really fun to me just because of the idea of being able to go be in a relationship with some horses and pretend that I'm in another timeline.
Right.
But also just kind of any role that would let me have an excuse to play with dancing or music. You know, I wrote a script about a DJ. I wanted to write a script about a ballerina. And,
I didn't even mention your DJing. You're a DJ too, so we haven't even talked about that. Is there? Do you fight with Trevor Risk over who gets to do the rap party?
You know what? Trevor was so sweet last rap party because he let me jump on the decks for a minute. Okay. But yeah, no. Yeah, no, I think it's all good. We talk about DJing another day. But okay. I dream roles. I think just any sort of I just went in so many different directions there for you. I think the thing that matters to me is just having diversity in what I get to play with, because it kind of feels free flowing in a sense of not getting like pigeonholed or typecasted or anything like that. Like having a nice balance in the world and the humans and the humanity that I get to explore.
Well, like I said, we've interviewed Bradley Trudeau, Dylan Cook. We've interviewed Harlan now and a lot of the Indigenous actors on the show. And there is for sure a lot more opportunity there with shows like Reservation Dogs, with shows like Shoresy and Letterkenny and so many others. So there's a lot more opportunity there, which is great. But wouldn't you say that maybe eventually the best sign that we've gone past this is when you can get roles where the byline isn't Indigenous, you know, it's just Mary, you know?
100%. 100%.
Right? Yeah.
You know, just sort of getting to that place where it's not such a fight for representation or voices, and where you can, like, I come across it in the DJ world too. Mm-hmm. A lot of hype on, oh, she's a girl DJ or she's a female DJ. And it's like, you know, you want the industry to get to a place where that's more natural, you know? So I think with acting, the same thing, just being a girl or a person, just, you know, I think that will feel nice as well. But and I do recognize, you know, the importance of representation in that same breath. So more balance.
For sure. Joey from Colorado wants to know what your order at Pepe Panini would be.
Joey from Colorado. I'm so sad that I didn't get to go to Pepe Panini. Oh, during the day for a panini. Mm-hmm. I was there at night when it was a club, but
okay.
I got to get back there during the day and order a panini. I would go with something with pesto, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And I think she, maybe you don't remember, I think she met Joey from Colorado. Wasn't he there the night before us and said he ran into you? I think
so, yeah. He's one of the from our party who met you guys before you left, yeah.
At Peddlers,
I Joey. Think it was. Yeah. Yep, yeah. I remember meeting them.
So that was Joey. Awesome. He also wanted to know, is there an actress or actor that you really want to work with in the future?
Yes, many. Mm-hmm. Who's? I'm never prepared for these questions. No? It's okay. Like whenever anybody asks me what my favorite movie is, I should know my answer.
Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as, I mean, if you ask me, I love movies. I don't have a favorite. I spread it out into genres. I'm like, I could tell you like my favorites within comedy, within action, but to hone in on one, no, not a thing. There's too much to love.
Who would you want to dance with?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I kind of gave myself away with Beyonce on that one.
Yeah.
But, I mean, a director that I admire that I've always wanted to work with is Ava DuVernay.
Okay.
As an actor, I would say there's so many strong Indigenous women that I really look up to right now. Jessica Matten is one of them. Grace Dove is from my community, and we've worked on a few independent things before, and to have an opportunity to work with her again would be so nice. I could go down this road a lot. Mm-hmm. But I'm gonna leave it there.
Okay. Jeff from Maine, this question here, you may have to fill us in on what this means. How did Aloha Entertainment come about? What is Aloha Entertainment?
So that was kind of, okay. Hey, Jeff, what's up? Sorry, I had to collect my thoughts there for a minute because it's been a minute since I've revisited that Aloha world. Aloha Entertainment was going to be sort of a reinstallment of a family dance group.
Oh, okay.
When I was growing up, my mom and my sisters and I would share a traditional Hawaiian dancing for special occasions up here, and we called ourselves the Hawaiian Sisters. Mm-hmm. And then we took a pause when I left town because I was down south and everybody else was still up in Clatley territory. So we weren't living together or dancing together at the time. And then when we reconnected as grownups, we were trying to see if that was going to kind of evolve with us. Mm-hmm. And I will say that sharing traditional music and dance for our family will always be really special. But I think that it's getting into a timeline where we are just kind of sharing that more intimately and in a more grounded and traditional way, where it's not so much for performance value and it's not so much commercialized. So I think just the relationship there is changing, and it's on pause.
It's great. Yeah, there's always time, you know. What would you call this? Or your bonus round, right? I mean, it's this time, mm-hmm. right? Our friend Gord from Toronto, he asked, you've already answered this question, but I just wanted to shout him out, that if you were aware of Letterkenny prior to Shoresy, which you kind of were, what do we have here? Who's this? This is Cassie. Cassie is one of our listeners who's proud Indigenous woman from Ontario. She wants to know, I mean, you've already talked about a bit of it about this, but, you know, your experience with the Indigenous representation on Shoresy. Can you speak to maybe some of the Indigenous brands that are used and to the importance of authenticity in the show?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have a wonderful crew that does an amazing job of making sure we can take every opportunity to have that representation. Ginger's the head of our wardrobe department. And so she's always finding the most mm-hmm. wonderful pieces from the most wonderful local artists or Indigenous artists from around, and very inclusive if we have things that we want to bring from our own closets or connections that we want to make there. So off the top of my head, I could name a few Indigenous owned brands and give them some love. So if anyone's interested out there, mm-hmm. we've got some Monday May jewelry action. She does incredible beaded earrings. Section 35 is my guy, Justin, mm-hmm. A clothing line that was actually just in the Met Museum.
Oh, wow.
And, I'm going through Meeg's wardrobe in my head as talking. What else do we have? Passage beading. We have, oh my gosh, I need to like look this up right now real quick while we're here.
Well, yeah. While you're looking at it up, if our other co-host Victor were here, he would ask you about the turtle and want to know what the significance is of the turtle. So do you have...
Yeah, he made sure to add that to the roster of questions.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Mm. So that was a beaded ring. That's kind of Meeg's signature ring.
Okay.
And I was so stoked when Ginger showed me that piece, because I'm sure all of you who watch the show have seen it make an appearance, but it's like this beautiful, large beaded ring that's got a turtle on it. Mm-hmm. And the significance of the turtle in Indigenous culture is... it's huge. It is a representation of Turtle Island, right, which I'm not sure if you folks or anyone out there has heard. That's kind of the original name of this continent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it relates to a story, a creation story of this earth and how it came to be here. So it's got, you can look it up, Turtle Island, the creation story. I believe it's an Anishinaabe story mm-hmm. of how Sky Woman falls from the sky, and it's at a time when the earth is just water. And so they are falling. And then I think there's like four, I'm going to get this story right, but there's four animals. There's a muskrat, a turtle. There's two more that are like water animals. Mm-hmm. And she gets saved by sitting on Turtle's back, and the way that she's able to kind of bring more life is if anyone is able to swim down to the bottom of the water and come up with some earth, because mm-hmm. she's Sky Woman, she's a woman, she can make life, so she could breathe life into the earth and create earth. So they each try to go swimming down as deep as they can. Nobody can go that deep. They keep coming up empty-handed. And then Muskrat, who's not a very strong swimmer, he's like, I'm going to try. And everybody's like, oh, but you're not a very good swimmer. Are you sure? And he's like, no, I want to try. I want to do my part. So he goes down and he's gone for a really long time, and he comes floating back up to the surface. So he's like sacrificed himself, but in his little paw, he's got some earth. And so Sky Woman takes the earth and she puts it on Turtle's back and breathes life into it. And then Turtle's back becomes the earth that we're on right now. And because she's Sky Woman, she honors Muskrat for his sacrifice and breathes life back into him as well. So it's just this really beautiful creation story mm-hmm. That comes from Indigenous roots and shows to me just kind of like sacrifice, reciprocity, respect, and like symbolizes our creation together.
So that was an amazing story. Thank you for sharing that. The one thing that blows my mind, and so Turtle Island, is it also representative of, like, North America does kind of look like a turtle? Is that, that's not an accident, right? That's part of it, right?
It's It blows my mind, because if you look at it from, like, above, it looks like a turtle and you can see its little tail, but I'm like, which how is Mexico?
Yeah,
that?
Like, Mexico's like, so that's the part I'm getting at, which is mind blowing to me, like, way before Google Earth, right?
Yeah,
a couple of years, yeah.
It's so true, though.
How did someone, or like, that? That's the mind blowing part about it. How did someone still already put that together in these stories of creation that, you know, you can see today? It's amazing.
It's so cool. I honestly, that is my question also.
Yeah. How did you do that?
Divine. They're divine.
It's exactly. Awesome. It's got to be. It has to be. And it's absolutely checks out. I love it.
Cassie's going to love that you told that story. She's got one last question from Cassie. What message or advice do you have to give to young Indigenous individuals who want to get into acting?
Your voices are so valued and valuable. There is space for them. And I think that your courage to show up in these spaces is so needed and so appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Great, great advice. Casey from Virginia, what has been the toughest life lesson you learned so far? And who is the person whose presence has been the most transformative in your life and why? So that's a big question. Feel free to answer.
You left the hard ones for the end.
Yeah, sorry about
Thank
that.
Thank you so much. I'm going to try to give these in like... very clear forms, because I know you were on the 11th hour, but like, I love these questions. Can you say the first one again? The first one?
Toughest life lesson you've learned so far.
Toughest life lesson. Everything is perfect. Literally everything is exactly how it's meant to be. Even the shittiest parts. Like, I think that was a lesson that I embraced after last summer and after the incident. You know, I wouldn't be on the path that I'm on right now if I wouldn't have gone through that hardest moment. And I'm really grateful to be on the path that I am now, because I'm at home reconnecting with family I never knew before, learning stories that I've always wanted to learn. So I think, yeah, everything is perfect.
Very good. The second part of that, I'm actually going to combine with Erin from Chicago, because she's a teacher and her question is the same. What is the best advice you've received on set? But more importantly, what educators inspired you the most?
Oof. Best advice I've received on set, breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Breathe. It kind of lets you slow down. It kind of lets you be in your body and be in your truth. It can be such a hectic, chaotic space to be in, and you don't want to be the one holding up the show. So sometimes it feels like I got to go, or I got to make this tight or short. And that just makes you... Mm-hmm. get so small, but really what it's about is that breath and that exploration and that life. So I think breathe was the standout one. Mm-hmm. And then,
educator,
what was the second part? Sorry.
Your teacher,
educator,
well, a teacher that inspired you the most.
Ooh! Right now it is, Kekuhi, Kanaka Ole. They are, a traditional chant, Kanaka Maoli voice from Hawaii. And recently I've been studying oral tradition and oral histories in relation to contemporary forms of storytelling. And they speak to storytelling and expression through the arts as communion with humanity and the natural world. And I think that lesson really, really resonates with me. It stands out with me, and I carry that with me a lot when I'm thinking about the work that I do.
Amazing. All right. Final question. And this one I ask everyone who comes on, because our friend Awesome, she is the moderator over at the Letterkenny and Shorzy Reddits. And she asks everyone we interview if they would do an AMA on Reddit and ask me anything. Are you aware of what those are? Basically, you make yourself available for, I think it's an hour, and people ask you questions and you answer them on Reddit. Like you just type them out. So it's
just
I'm super down. Yeah, let's go.
Excellent. Cool. So I'll connect you with Awesome with her details, and then she'll reach out, because she's had she's had a bunch of cast members on, but I'm sure she'd love to have you on as well.
I would love that.
Okay, great. And my only final question is, do you have anything you want to promote or shed light on that we can, you know, amplify here for you?
I do. Mm-hmm. Right off the cuff. Thank you for that question and this platform. Tlaili Two Rivers Water is the translation of that phrase. Clately is the two rivers, and water is two in our language. Mm-hmm. I started a campaign in support of reclamation of our drinking water on the reservation out here, not only as obviously a basic human right, but mm-hmm. also as a form of cultural reclamation. I'm just in the baby steps of bringing that campaign to the world, because the first step for us was to get community approval, permission, and now that I have that, I'm just getting ready to share the story with the world. So I will share some links with you on that later on.
Please do.
Yeah, please.
And that will be a project that's really close to my heart.
Tag us on anything and we'll happily share it around.
And I will also, because for the Indigenous listeners and the non-Indigenous who are familiar with the Three Sisters, Corn, Beans, and Squash, I would be remiss if I did not give some shout out and some love to my two siblings who are we are the corn, beans, and squash for each other. So if you are interested to hear, like, I just have to tell you, like, they're a part of me. They're a reason why I do what I do. They teach me so much. Ke Aloha is a musician. I am kealoha.ca, or I think it's just kealoha.ca. Her debut album is coming out this year. And my other sibling, Tiare, is an incredible visual artist. And so I just, you know, I got to give them some love.
Yeah, I saw a couple of Kayla's videos on your production company's website, which look great. The music's amazing. So definitely we'll share that out. Matt, do you have any final questions?
Yeah, I ask everyone this and I often phrase it slightly different. But I mean, us doing what we do, we believe Letterkenny ensures you so much more than just, you know, your standard show, that with the impact and the spread that they're having from a whole different walks of life around the world. Like, we have listeners as far as Australia. Like, people love these shows. From your perspective, what has it meant to be a part of this, to be a part of Shorzy?
I really couldn't have said it better than you just said it. Like, it's incredible to see the reach and the response from audiences that this show gets, like going through the DMs on some days and seeing how people are impacted and just hearing like the inspiration or the hope that it gives them on a bad day. Mm-hmm. Those stories and those messages I'm so grateful for. And I can't be surprised, because it comes from the heart, and because being there feels like such a truthful exploration of like a fight for the underdog. Mm-hmm. And I know so many people can relate to that fight as the underdog. You know, I definitely didn't grow up in a lot of privilege. So for myself, and knowing what I want to bring home to community and how I want to help uplift and just seeing the ways that we can do that through our arts, through our stories, I think it couldn't be a better introduction to this world and to this work.
Well, thank you so much. And I know Al's going to wrap us up here, so I just want to say, and then Tanya, go, thank you so much. You are an absolutely beautiful human, and I so appreciate you bringing your authenticity today. Mm-hmm. This was just an amazing hour, and I wish we could chat with you all day, because you're a fascinating individual. Mm-hmm. So thank you for coming out.
Tan?
Thank you for having me.
Yes.
It's been great to share this time and these stories with you. Masicho.
Thank you so much for sharing your stories, your life, your experiences with us. It's just been so wonderful to listen to you and to hear you speak about everything. So inspiring, so moving. It's been so lovely to speak with you. Thank you so much for sharing this time with us.
Thank you, Tanya.
I echo my co-host's gratitude. Thank you so much. I reached out to you earlier and asked you if there was a song you'd like us to play us out with. And I love your pick. I love this pick. I can't wait to play this. So here we go. We are going to play us out here with Come and Get Your Love by Redbone. Nothing. that's all we have for this episode. Don't forget you can use a promo code PROTOSTAN for 20% off purchase at DiabolicalCoffee.com. If you'd like to support this podcast, rate us on iTunes, Spotify, or become a patron. You can also follow us on most social media outlets at PROTOSTAN Pod. Thank you for joining us. On behalf of Kaylani, Tanya, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a great week.